7. Rory decided to wear a dress for her outing with Kate Logan. Although she rose early, both Skip and Clay had eaten breakfast and left the house by the time she came downstairs, which was just as well, Rory thought. Mary stood at the stove, frying chunks of beef for a luncheon stew. "I spoke to Clay about your cooking dinner later this week. He says that'll be fine if you're still around, but the way he sees it, you'll be on your way in a day or two." Rory poured herself a cup of coffee. "I'll be happy to do it if I'm here. Otherwise, I'm sure Kate Logan would be more than pleased." Mary turned to face her, mouth open as if to comment. Instead, her eyes widened in appreciation. "My, my, you look pretty enough to hog-tie a man's heart." "Thank you, Mary," Rory answered, grinning. "I suppose you got yourself a sweetheart back there in San Francisco?" she asked, watching her closely. "A pretty girl like you is bound to attract plenty of men." Rory paused to think about her answer. She briefly considered mentioning Dan, but decided against it. She'd planned this separation to gain a perspective on their relationship, and within hours of arriving at Elk Run, Rory had found her answer. Dan would always be a special friend, but nothing more.
"The question shouldn't require a week's thought," Mary grumbled, stirring the large pot of simmering beef.
"Sorry, I was mulling something over."
"Then there is someone?"
She shook her head. "No." The answer didn't seem to please Mary, because she frowned.
"When did you say that fancy car of yours was going to be fixed?"
The abrupt question caught Rory by surprise. Mary was openly concerned about the attraction between her and Clay. The housekeeper, who probably knew Clay as well as anyone did, clearly wasn't blind to what had been happening, and just as clearly didn't like it. "The mechanic in Riversdale said it should be finished the day after tomorrow, if all goes well."
"Good,"
Mary proclaimed with a fierce nod, then turned back to her stew. Rory couldn't help smiling at the older woman's astuteness. Mary was telling her that the sooner she was off Elk Run, the better for everyone concerned. Rory had to agree. Kate Logan arrived promptly at 10. She wore tight-fitting jeans, red checkered western shirt, and a white silk scarf knotted at her throat. Her long, honey-colored hair was woven into thick braids that fell over her shoulders. At first glance, Kate looked closer to 16 than the 24 Rory knew her to be. Kate greeted her with a warm smile.
"Rory, there wasn't any need to wear something so nice. I should have told you to dress casually."
Rory's shoulders slumped. "I brought along more dresses than jeans. Am I overdressed? I could change," she said hesitantly.
"Oh, no, you look lovely."
But for the first time, Kate seemed worried. The doubt that played across her features would have been amusing if Rory hadn't already been suffering from such a potent bout of guilt. It was all too obvious that Kate viewed Rory as a threat. If Clay Franklin had chosen that moment to walk into the kitchen, Rory would have called him every foul name she could think of. She was furious with him for doing this to her, and to Kate.
"I wear a lot of dresses because of my job at the library," Rory rushed to explain.
"I also date quite a bit. I've been seeing someone, Dan Rogers, for a while now. In fact, it's his car I was driving."
"You're dating someone special?"
Kate asked, sounding relieved.
"Yes, Dan and I have been going out for several months."
Mary coughed noisily and sent Rory an accusing glare. Rory ignored her.
"Shouldn't we be leaving?"
"Oh, sure, anytime you're ready."
When they were outside, Kate turned to face Rory. Looking uncomfortable, she slipped her hands into the back pockets of her jeans.
"I've embarrassed you, and I'm sorry. I didn't mean to imply that I didn't trust you and Clay."
"There's no need for an apology. I'm sure I wouldn't react any differently if Clay was my fiancé."
Kate shook her head. "But I feel as if I should apologize.
I'm not going to be the kind of wife Clay wants if I can't trust him around a pretty girl once in a while.
Had the earth cracked open just then, Rory would gladly have fallen in. That had to be preferable to looking at Kate and feeling the things she did about Clay Franklin.
Don't have any worries about me, she said, dismissing the issue as nonchalantly as she could. I'll be out of everyone's hair in a day or two.
Oh, Rory, please. I don't want you to rush off because I had a silly attack of jealousy. Now I feel terrible.
Don't, please. I have to leave. I want to leave. My vacation's on hold until I can get my car repaired, and there's so much I'd planned to see and do. She dug in her bag for a brochure. Have you ever been up to Victoria on Vancouver Island?
Once, but I was only 5. Too young to remember much of anything, Kate told her, scanning the pamphlet.
This does sound like fun.
Maybe this is where Clay and I should have our honeymoon.
It'd be perfect for that, Rory murmured.
Her heart constricted with a sudden flash of pain, but she ruthlessly forced down her emotions, praying Kate hadn't noticed.
I'm looking forward to visiting Canada. By the way, Mary's driving to Riversdale to visit her sister later in the week. She's asked me to take charge of cooking dinner if I'm still here. Would you like to help? We could have a good time and really get to know each other.
Oh, that would be great.
Kate slipped her arm around Rory's waist and gave her an enthusiastic squeeze.
Thank you, Rory. I know you're trying to reassure me, and I appreciate it.
That had been exactly Rory's intent.
It probably sounds selfish, Kate continued, but I'm glad your car broke down when it did. Without any difficulty at all, I can see us becoming the best of friends.
Rory could too, but that only added to her growing sense of uneasiness. Nightingale was a sleepy kind of town. Businesses lined both sides of Main Street, with a beauty shop, an insurance agency, Nellie's Cafe, and a service station on one side, a grocery store, pharmacy, and Five and Dime on the other. Rory had the impression that things happened in their own time in Nightingale, Oregon. Few places could have been more unlike San Francisco, where people always seemed to be rushing. Here, no one seemed to feel any need to hurry. It was as though this town, with its population of 1,500, existed in a time warp. Rory found the relaxed pace unexpectedly pleasant.
The library is across from the high school on Maple Street, Kate explained as she parked her Ford on Main. That way students have easy access.
Rory climbed out of the car, automatically pressing down the door lock.
You don't have to do that here. There hasn't been a vehicle stolen in, at least 20 years.
Rory's eyes must have revealed her surprise because Kate went on.
Actually, we had trouble passing our last bond issue for a new patrol car. People couldn't see the need since there hasn't been a felony committed in over 2 years. About the worst thing that goes on is when Harry Ackerman gets drunk.
That happens once or twice a year, and he's arrested for disturbing the peace, she grinned sheepishly. He sings old love songs to Nellie at the top of his lungs in front of the cafe. They were apparently sweet on each other a long time back. Nellie married someone else, and Harry never got over the loss of his one true love.
Looping the strap of her bag over her shoulder, Rory looked around the quiet streets.
The fire and police station are in the same building, Kate pointed out next. And there's a really nice restaurant on Oak. If you want, we could have lunch there.
Only if you let me treat.
I wouldn't hear of it, Kate said with a shake of her head that sent her braids flying. You're my guest.
Rory decided not to argue, asking another question instead. Where do the ranchers get their supplies? It seemed to her that type of store would do a thriving business, yet she hadn't seen one.
At Garner's Feed and Supply. It's on the outskirts of town. I'll take you past on the way out. In fact, we should take a driving tour so you can see a little more of Nightingale. Main Street is only a small part of it.
By the time Kate and Rory walked over to Maple and the library, Rory's head was swimming with the names of all the people Kate had insisted on introducing. It seemed everyone had heard about her car problems and was eager to talk to her. Several mentioned the Grange dance that night and said they'd be looking for her there.
"You're really going to be impressed with the library," Kate promised as they walked the two streets over to Maple. "Dad and the others worked hard to get the levee passed so we could build it. People here tend to be tight-fisted. Dad says they squeeze a nickel so hard the buffalo belches."
Rory laughed outright at that. The library was the largest building in town, a sprawling one-story structure with lots of windows. The hours were posted on the double glass doors, and Rory noted that the library wouldn't be open until the middle of the afternoon, still several hours away.
"It doesn't seem to be open," she said, disappointed. "Oh, don't worry, I've got a key. All the volunteers do."
Kate rummaged in her bag and took out a large key ring. She opened the door, pushing it wide for Rory to enter first.
"Mrs. Haldorfson retired last year, a month after the building was finished," Kate told her, flipping on the lights. "And the town's budget wouldn't stretch to hire a new full-time librarian. So a number of parents and teachers are taking turns volunteering. We've got a workable schedule, unless someone goes on vacation, which I hate to admit has been happening all summer."
"You don't have a full-time librarian?" Rory couldn't disguise her astonishment. "Why go to all the trouble and expense of building a modern facility if you can't afford a librarian?"
"You'll have to ask town council that," Kate returned, shrugging. "It doesn't make much sense, does it? But you see, Mrs. Haldorfson was only part-time, and the council seems to think that's what her replacement should be."
"That doesn't make sense either.
Especially when you consider that the new library is twice the size of the old one."
Rory had to bite her tongue to keep from saying more, but she was appalled at the waste, the missed opportunities.
"We've been advertising for months for a part-time librarian, but so far we haven't found anyone interested. Not that I blame them. One look at the size of the job and no one wants to tackle it alone."
"A library is more than a place to check books in and out," Rory said, gesturing dramatically. Her voice rose despite herself. This was an issue close to her heart, and polite silence was practically impossible.
"A library can be the heart of a community. It can be a place for classes, community services, all kinds of things. Don't nonprofit organizations use it for meetings?"
"I'm afraid not," Kate answered. "Everyone gets together at Nellie's when there's any kind of meeting."
"Nellie serves great pies," she added,
as though that explained everything. Realizing that she'd climbed onto her soapbox, Rory dropped her hands and shrugged.
"It's a very nice building, Kate, and you have every reason to be proud. I didn't mean to sound so righteous."
"But you're absolutely correct," Kate said thoughtfully. "We're not using the library to its full potential, are we? Volunteers can only do so much. As it is, the library's only open 3 afternoons a week," she sighed expressively.
"To be honest, I think Dad and the other members of the town council are expecting Mrs. Haldorfson to come back in the fall, but that's unfair to her. She served the community for over 20 years. She deserves to retire in peace without being blackmailed into coming back because we can't find a replacement."
"Well, I hope you find someone soon."
"I hope so, too," Kate murmured.
They ate a leisurely lunch, and as she'd promised, Kate gave Rory a tour of the town. After showing her several churches, the elementary school where she taught second grade, and some of the nicer homes on the hill, Kate ended the tour on the outskirts of town near Garner's Feed and Supply.
"Luke's here," Kate said, easing into the parking place next to a dusty pickup truck.
"Luke?"
"Our foreman. I don't know what Dad would do without him. He runs the ranch and has for years, ever since I was in high school. Dad's retirement age now, and he's more than willing to let Luke take charge."
Kate got out of the car and leaned against the front fender, crossing her arms over her chest. Rory joined her.
"He'll be out in a minute," Kate said.
True to her word, A tall, deeply tanned man appeared with a sack of grain slung over his shoulder. His eyes were so dark they gleamed like onyx, taking in everything around him, but revealing little of his own thoughts. His strong, square chin was balanced by a high, intelligent brow. He was lean and muscular and strikingly handsome.
"Need any help, stranger?" Kate asked with a laugh.
"You offering?"
"Nope,"
Luke chuckled. "That's what I figured. You wouldn't want to ruin those pretty nails of yours now, would you?"
"I didn't stop to be insulted by you," Kate chastised, clearly enjoying the exchange. "I wanted you to meet Rory Campbell. She's the one Clay was telling us about the other night, whose car broke down."
"I remember."
For the first time, the foreman's gaze left Kate. He tossed the sack of grain into the back of the truck and used his teeth to tug his glove free from his right hand. Then he presented his long, calloused fingers to Rory.
"Pleased to meet you, ma'am."
"The pleasure's mine."
Rory remembered where she'd heard the name. Skip had mentioned Luke Rivers when he'd told her about the Grange Square dance. He'd said something about all the girls being attracted to the foreman. Rory could understand why. They exchanged a brief handshake before Luke's attention slid back to Kate. His eyes softened perceptibly.
"Luke's like a brother to me," Kate said fondly.
He frowned at that, but didn't comment.
"We're going to let you escort us to the dance tonight," she informed him.
"What about Clay?"
"Oh, he'll meet us there. I thought the three of us could go over together."
Rory wasn't fooled. Kate was setting her up with Luke, who didn't look any too pleased at having his evening arranged for him.
"Kate, listen," she began. "I'd really rather skip the dance tonight. I've never done any square dancing in my life."
"That doesn't matter," Kate interrupted. "Luke will be glad to show you, won't you, Luke?"
"Sure,"
he mumbled, with the enthusiasm of a man offered the choice between hanging and a firing squad.
"Honestly, Luke?"
Kate gave an embarrassed laugh. "Listen," Rory said quickly. "It's obvious Luke has his own plans for tonight. I don't want to intrude." He surprised her by turning toward her, his eyes searching hers.
"I'd be happy to escort you, Rory."
"I'm likely to step all over your toes. I really think I should sit the whole thing out."
"Nonsense," Kate cried.
"Luke won't let you do that, and neither will I."
"We'll enjoy ourselves," the foreman said. "Leave everything to me."
Rory nodded reluctantly. A moment of awkward silence fell over the trio.
"Well, I suppose I should get Rory back to Circle L and see about finding her address," Kate said, smiling. She playfully tossed her car keys in the air and caught them deftly.
Luke tipped his hat when they both returned to the car. Rory didn't mention his name until they were back on the road.
"Luke really is attractive, isn't he?" she asked, closely watching Kate.
The other woman nodded eagerly.
"It surprises me that he's not married. There are plenty of girls around Nightingale who'd be more than willing, believe me. At every Grange dance, the ladies flirt with him like crazy. I love to tease him about it. He really hates that. But I wish Luke would get married. I don't like the idea of him living his life alone. It's time he thought about settling down and starting a family. He was 30 last month, but when I said something about it, he nearly bit my head off."
Rory nibbled on her lower lip. She inhaled a deep breath and released it slowly. Her guess was that Luke Rivers had his heart set on someone special, and that someone was engaged to another man. God help him, Rory thought. She knew exactly how he felt. The music was already playing by the time Luke, Kate, and Rory arrived at the Grange Hall in Luke's 10-year-old four-door sedan. Rory tried to force some enthusiasm for this outing, but had little success. She hadn't exchanged more than a few words with the foreman during the entire drive. He apparently didn't like this arranged date business any better than she did. But they were stuck with each other, and Rory at least was determined to make the best of it. They entered the hall and were greeted by the cheery voice of the male caller,
Rope the cow, brand the calf, swing your sweetheart once and a half.
Rory hadn't known what to expect, but she was surprised by the smooth-stepping, smartly dressed dancers who twirled around the floor following the caller's directions. She felt more daunted than ever by the evening ahead of her. And to worsen matters, Kate had insisted Rory borrow one of her outfits. Although Rory liked the bright blue colors, she felt awkward and self-conscious in the billowing skirts. The Grange itself was bigger than Rory had anticipated. On the stage stood the caller and several fiddlers. Refreshment tables lined one wall, and the polished dance floor was so crowded, Rory wondered how anyone could move without bumping into others. The entire meeting hall was alive with energy and music, and despite herself, she felt her mood lift. Her toes started tapping out rhythms almost of their own accord. Given time, she'd be out there too, joining the vibrant, laughing dancers. It was unavoidable anyway. She knew Kate wouldn't allow her to sit sedately in the background and watch. Neither would Clay and Skip, who'd just arrived. "Oh, my feet are moving already," Kate was squirming with eagerness. Clay smiled indulgently, tucked his arm around her waist, and the two of them stepped onto the dance floor. He glanced back once at Rory before a circle of eight opened up to admit them.
"Shall we?" Luke asked,
eyeing the dance floor. He didn't sound too enthusiastic, and Rory didn't blame him. "Would it be all right if we sat out the first couple of dances?" she asked. "I'd like to get more into the swing of things."
"No problem."
Luke looked almost grateful for the respite, which didn't lend Rory much confidence. No doubt he assumed this city slicker was going to make a fool of herself and of him, and she probably would. When he escorted her to the row of chairs, Rory made the mistake of sitting down. Instantly, her skirts leaped up into her face. Embarrassed, she pushed them down, then tucked the material under her thighs in an effort to tame the layers of stiff petticoats.
"Hello, Luke." A pretty blonde with sparkling blue eyes sauntered over. "I didn't know if you'd show tonight or not. Glad you did."
"Beth Hammond, this is Rory Campbell." Rory nodded.
"It's nice to meet you, Beth." "Oh, I heard about you at the drugstore yesterday. You're the gal with the broken-down sports car, aren't you?"
"That's me."
By now it shouldn't have surprised Rory that everyone knew about her troubles.
"I hope everything turns out okay."
"Thanks." Although Beth was speaking to Rory, her eyes didn't leave Luke. It was patently obvious that she expected an invitation to dance.
"Luke, why don't you dance with Beth?" Rory suggested. "That way I'll gather a few pointers from watching the two of you." "What a good idea," Beth chirped eagerly. "We'll stay on the outskirts of the crowd so you can see how it's done. Be sure and listen to Charlie. He's the caller. Then you'll see what each step is."
Rory nodded agreeably. Luke gave Lori a long, sober look.
"You're sure?"
"Positive."
"All join hands, circle right around. Stop in place at your hometown."
Studying the dancers, Rory quickly picked up the terms do-si-do, Allemande left and Allemande right, and a number of others, which she struggled to keep track of. By the end of the dance, her foot was tapping out the lively beat of the fiddler's music, and a smile formed as she listened to the perfectly rhyming words.
"Rory," Skip said, suddenly standing in front of her, "may I have the pleasure of this dance?"
I don't think I'm ready yet."
"Nonsense."
Without listening to her protest, he grabbed her hand and hauled her to her feet.
"Skip, I'll embarrass you," she protested in a low whisper. "I've never done this before."
"You've got to start sometime."
He tucked his arm around her waist and led her close to the stage.
"We got a newcomer, Charlie," Skip called out, "so make this one simple."
Charlie gave Skip a thumbs up and reached for the microphone.
"We'll go a bit slower this time," Charlie announced to his happy audience. "Miss Rory Campbell from San Francisco has joined us, and it's her first time on the floor."
Rory wanted to curl up and die as 100 faces turned to stare at her. But the dancers were shouting and cheering their welcome, and Rory shyly raised her hand, smiling into the crowd. Getting through that first series of steps was the most difficult, but soon Rory was in the middle of the floor, stepping and twirling and laughing. Something she'd always assumed to be a silly, outdated activity turned out to be great fun. By the time Skip led her back to her chair, she was breathless. "Want some punch?" he asked. Rory nodded eagerly. Her throat felt parched. When Skip left her, Luke Rivers appeared at her side.
"You did just great,"
he said sincerely. "For a city girl, you mean," she teased.
"As good as anyone."
"Thanks."
"I suspect I owe you an apology, Rory."
"Because you didn't want to make a fool of yourself with me on the dance floor?" she asked with a light laugh. "That's understandable. Kate and Clay practically threw me in your lap. I'm sure you had other plans for tonight, and I'm sorry for your sake that we got stuck with each other." Luke grinned.
"Trust me, I've had plenty of envious looks from around the room. Any of a dozen different men would be more than happy to be stuck with you."
That went a long way toward boosting her ego. She would have commented, but Skip came back just then, carrying a paper cup filled with bright pink punch. A teenage girl was beside him, clutching his free arm and smiling dreamily up at him.
"I'm going to dance with Caroline now, okay?" he said to Rory.
"That's fine," she answered, smiling. "And thank you for braving the dance floor with me." Skip blushed as he slipped an arm around Caroline's waist and hurried her off.
"You game?"
Luke nodded toward the dancing couples. Rory didn't hesitate. She swallowed the punch in 3 giant gulps and gave him her hand. Together they moved onto the crowded floor. By the end of the 3rd set of dances, Rory had twirled around with so many different partners she lost track of them. She'd caught sight of Clay only once, and when he saw her, he waved. Returning the gesture, she promptly missed her footing and nearly fell into her partner's waiting arms. The tall sheriff's deputy was all too happy to have her throw herself at him and told her as much, to Rory's embarrassment. Although it was only 10 o'clock, Rory was exhausted and so warm the perspiration ran in rivulets down her face and neck. She had to escape. Several times she'd tried to sit out a dance, but no one would listen to her excuses. In an effort to catch her breath and cool down, Rory took advantage of a break between sets to wander outside. The night air was refreshing. Quite a few other people had apparently had the same idea. The field that served as a car park was crowded with groups and strolling couples. As she made her way through the dimly lit field, she saw a handful of men passing around a flask of whiskey and entertaining each other with off-color jokes. She steered a wide circle around them and headed toward Luke's parked car, deciding it was far enough away to discourage anyone from following her. In her eagerness to escape, she nearly stumbled over a couple locked in a passionate embrace against the side of a pickup. Rory mumbled an apology when the pair glanced up at her, irritation written all over their young faces. Good grief. She'd only wanted a few minutes alone in order to get a breath of fresh air. She hadn't expected to walk through an obstacle course. When she finally arrived at Luke Rivers's car, she leaned on the fender and slowly inhaled the clean country air. All her assumptions about this evening had been wrong. She'd been so sure she'd feel lonely and bored and out of place, and she'd felt none of those things. If she were to tell Dan about the Grange dance, he'd laugh at the idea of having such a grand time with a bunch of what he'd refer to as country bumpkins. The thought annoyed her. These were good, friendly, fun-loving people. They'd taken her under their wing, expressed their welcome without reserve, and now they were showing her an uncomplicated lifestyle that had more appeal than Rory would have believed possible.
"I thought I'd find you out here."
Rory's whole body tensed as she recognized the voice of the man who'd joined her.
Hello, Clay.
8.
Rory injected a cheerful note into her voice. She turned around, half expecting Kate to be with him. The two had been inseparable from the minute Clay had arrived. It was just as well that Kate was around, since her presence prevented Clay and Rory from giving in to any temptation. Clay's hands settled on her shoulders, and Rory flinched involuntarily at his touch. With noticeable regret, Clay dropped his hands.
"Are you having a good time?" he asked.
She nodded. "I didn't think I would, which tells you how prejudiced I've been about country life, but I've been pleasantly surprised."
"I'm glad."
His hands clenched briefly at his sides, then he flexed his fingers a couple of times.
"I would have danced with you myself, but..."
She stopped him abruptly. "Clay, no. Don't explain. It isn't necessary. I understand."
His eyes held hers with such tenderness that she had to look away. The magical quality was in the air again. Rory could feel it as forcefully as if the stars had spelled it out across the heavens.
"I don't think you do understand, Rory," Clay said. "But it doesn't matter. You'll be gone in a couple of days, and both our lives will go back to the way they were meant to be."
Rory agreed with a quick nod. It was too tempting, standing in the moonlight with Clay. Much too tempting. The memory of another night in which they'd stood and gazed at the stars returned with powerful intensity. Rory realized that even talking to each other, alone like this, was dangerous.
"Won't Kate be looking for you?" she asked carefully.
"No. Luke Rivers is dancing with her."
For a moment, she closed her eyes, not daring to look up at Clay.
"I guess I'll be going inside now. I just came out to catch my breath and cool down a little."
"Dance with me first, here in the moonlight."
A protest rose within her, but the instant Clay slid his arms around her waist, Rory felt herself give in. Kate would have him the rest of her life, but Rory only had these few hours. Almost against her will, her hands found his shoulders, slipping around his neck with an ease that brought a sigh of pleasure to her lips.
Being held by Clay shouldn't feel this good.
"Oh, Rory,"
he moaned as she settled into his embrace. They fitted together as if they'd been created for each other.
His chin touched the top of her head, and he caressed her hair with his jaw.
"This is a mistake," Rory murmured, closing her eyes, savoring the warm, secure feel of his arms.
"I know."
But neither seemed willing to release the other. His mouth grazed her temple, and he kissed her there.
"God help me, Rory. What am I going to do? I haven't been able to stop thinking about you. I can't sleep. I hardly eat."
His voice was raw, almost savage. "Oh, please," she said with a soft cry.
"We can't. We mustn't even talk like this."
His gray eyes smoldered above hers, and their breaths merged as his mouth hovered so close to her own.
"I vowed I wouldn't touch you again."
Rory looked away. She'd made the same promise to herself. But it wasn't in her to deny him now, although her mind searched frantically for the words to convince him how wrong they were to risk hurting Kate and each other. His hands drifted up from her shoulders, his fingertips skimming the sides of her neck, trailing over her cheeks and through the softness of her hair. He placed his index finger over her lips, gently stroking them apart. Rory moaned. She moistened her lips with the tip of her tongue. Clay's left hand dug into her shoulders as her tongue caressed the length of his finger, drawing it into her mouth and sucking it gently. She needed him so much in that moment she could have wept.
"Just this once, for these few minutes," he pleaded. Let me pretend you're mine.
His hands cupped her face and slowly brought her mouth to his, smothering her whimper of part welcome, part protest. A long series of kisses followed, deep, relentless, searching kisses that sent her heart soaring, kisses that only made the coming loneliness more painful. A sob swelled within her, and tears burned her eyes as she twisted away and tore her mouth from his. No, she cried, covering her face with her hands and turning her back to him. Please, Clay, we shouldn't be doing this. He was silent for so long that Rory suspected he'd left her. She inhaled a deep, calming breath and dropped her hands limply to her sides.
It would be so easy to love you, Rory.
No, she whispered, shaking her head vigorously as she faced him again. I'm not the right person for you. It's too late for that. You've got Kate. She couldn't keep the pain out of her voice. Anything between them was hopeless, futile. Within a day or two, her car would be repaired, and she'd vanish from his life as suddenly as she'd appeared. Clay fell silent, his shoulders stiff and resolute as he stood silhouetted against the light of the Grange Hall. His face was masked by shadows, and Rory couldn't read his thoughts. He drew in a harsh breath.
You're right, Rory. We can't allow this attraction between us to get out of hand. I promise you, by all I hold dear, that I won't kiss you again.
I'll do my part, too, she assured him, feeling better now that they'd made this agreement. His hand reached for hers and clasped it warmly.
Come on, I'll walk you back to the hall. We're going to be all right. We'll do what we have to do.
Clay's tone told her he meant it. Relieved, Rory silently made the same promise to herself. Rory slept late the next morning, later than she would have thought possible. Mary was busy with lunch preparations by the time she made her way downstairs.
Did you enjoy yourself last night?
Mary immediately asked. In response, Rory curtsied and danced a few steps with an imaginary partner, clapping her hands. Mary tried to hide a smile at Rory's antics.
Oh, get away with you now. All I was looking for was a yes or a no.
I had a great time.
It was nothing like those city hot spots, I'll wager.
You're right about that, Rory told her, pouring herself a cup of coffee.
You seeing Kate today?
Rory shook her head and popped a piece of bread in the toaster. She's got a doctor's appointment this morning and a teacher's meeting this afternoon. She's going to stop by later if she has a chance, but if not, I'll be seeing her for sure tomorrow. Rory intended to spend as much time as she could with Clay's fiancé. She genuinely enjoyed her company, and being with her served two useful purposes. It helped keep Rory occupied, and it prevented her from being alone with Clay.
What are you going to do today, then?
Mary asked, frowning. Rory laughed. Don't worry. Whatever it is, I promise to stay out of your way. The housekeeper gave a snort of amusement. Or was it relief?
Actually, I thought I'd finish putting the data Clay needs for his pedigree research program into the computer. There isn't much left, and I should be done by this afternoon.
So if someone comes looking for you, that's where you'll be?
That's where I'll be, Rory echoed.
She didn't know who would come looking for her, as Mary put it.
The housekeeper made it sound as though a posse was due to arrive any minute, demanding to know where the Franklin men were hiding Rory Campbell. Taking her coffee cup with her, Rory walked across the yard and into the barn. Once more, she was impressed with all the activity that went on there. She'd come to know several of the men by their first names and returned their greetings with a smile and a wave. As before, she found the office empty. She set down her cup while she turned on the computer and collected Clay's data. She'd just started to type it in when she heard someone enter the room. Pausing, she twisted around.
Rory,
Clay. They were awkward with each other now, almost afraid.
I didn't realize you were here.
She stood abruptly.
I'll leave. No, I came up to get something. I'll be gone in a minute.
She nodded and sat back down. Okay. He walked briskly to his desk and sifted through the untidy stacks of paper. His gaze didn't waver from the task, but his jaw was tight, his teeth clenched. Impatience marked his every move.
Kate told me you're involved with a man in San Francisco. I didn't know.
I'm not exactly involved with him, at least not in the way you're implying. His name is Dan Rogers, and we've been seeing each other for about 6 months. He's divorced. The MG is his. Clay's mouth thinned, but he still didn't look at her.
Are you in love with him?
No. Lowering his head, Clay rubbed his hand over his eyes.
I had no right to ask you that. None. Forgive me, Rory.
Then, clutching his papers, he stalked out of the office without a backward glance. Rory was so shaken by the encounter that when she went back to her typing, she made 3 mistakes in a row and had to stop to regain her composure. When the phone rang, she ignored it, knowing Mary or one of the men would answer it. Soon afterward, she heard running footsteps behind her and swiveled around in the chair. A breathless Skip bolted into the room. Shoulders heaving, he pointed in the direction of the telephone. It's for you, he panted.
Me? It could only be Dan.
He nodded several times, his hand braced theatrically against his heart. She picked up the extension.
Hello, she said, her fingers closing tightly around the receiver. This is Rory Campbell.
Miss Campbell, came the unmistakable voice of George, the mechanic in Riversdale. Let me put it to you like this. I've got good news and bad news.
Now what? She cried, pushing her hair off her forehead with an impatient hand. She had to get out of Elk Run.
My man picked up the water pump for your car in Portland, just like we planned.
Good. George sighed heavily.
There's a minor problem, though.
Minor? She repeated, hopefully.
Well, not that minor, actually.
Oh, great. Listen, George, I'd prefer not to play guessing games with you. Just tell me what happened and how long it's going to be before I can get out of here.
I'm sorry, Miss Campbell, but they shipped the wrong part. It'll be 2, possibly 3 more days.
9.
What's the matter?
Skip asked when Rory indignantly replaced the receiver. She crossed her arms over her chest and breathed deeply, battling down the angry frustration that boiled inside her. The problem wasn't George's fault or Skip's or Kate's or anyone else's.
Rory? Skip asked again.
They shipped the wrong part for the car, she said flatly. I'm going to be stuck here for another 2 or possibly 3 days. Skip didn't look the least bit perturbed at this information.
Gee, Rory, that's not so terrible. We like having you around. And you like it here, don't you?
Yes, but how could she explain that her reservations had nothing to do with their company, the farm, or even with country life? She couldn't very well blurt out that she was falling in love with his brother, that she had to escape before she ruined their lives.
But what? Skip asked.
My vacation.
I know you had other plans, but you can relax and enjoy yourself here just as well, can't you?
She didn't attempt to answer him, but closed her eyes and nodded faintly.
Well, listen, I've got to get back to work. Do you need me for anything?
She shook her head. When the office door closed, Rory sat down in front of the computer again and poised her fingers over the keyboard. She sat like that, unmoving, for several minutes as her thoughts churned. What was she going to do? Every time she came near Clay, the attraction was so strong that trying to ignore it was like swimming upstream.
Rory had planned on leaving Elk Run the following day. Now she was trapped here for God only knew how much longer. She got up suddenly and started pacing the office floor. Dan hadn't called her either. She might have vanished from the face of the earth as far as he was concerned. The stupid car was his, after all, and the least he could do was make some effort to find out what had happened. Rory knew she wasn't being entirely reasonable, but she was caught up in the momentum of her anger and frustration. Impulsively, she snatched up the telephone receiver, had the operator charge the call to her San Francisco number, and dialed Dan's office.
"Rory, thank God you phoned," Dan said.
The worry in his voice appeased her a little. "The least you could have done was call me back," she fumed.
"I tried. My secretary apparently wrote down the wrong number. I've been waiting all this time for you to call me again. Why didn't you? What on earth is going on?"
She told him in detail, from the stalled car to her recent conversation with the mechanic. She didn't tell him about Clay Franklin and the way he made her feel.
"Rory, baby, I'm so sorry,"
she nodded mutely, close to tears. If she wasn't so dangerously close to falling in love with Clay, none of this would seem such a disaster. The silence lengthened while Dan apparently mulled things over.
"Shall I come and get you?" he finally asked.
"With what?" she asked with surprising calm. "My car? You were the one who convinced me it would never make this trip. Besides, how would you get the MG back?"
"I'd figured something out. Listen, I can't let you sit around in some backwoods farm town. I'll borrow a car or rent one."
He hesitated, then expelled his breath in a short burst of impatience.
"Damn, forget that. I can't come."
"You can't?"
"I've got a meeting tomorrow afternoon. It's important. I can't miss it. I'm sorry, Rory, I really am, but there's nothing I can do."
"Don't worry about it," she said, defeat causing her voice to dip slightly. "I understand." In a crazy kind of way, she did. Dan was a rising stockbroker, so career moves were critical to him, more important than rescuing Rory, the woman he claimed to love. Somehow, Rory couldn't picture Clay making the same decision. In her heart, she knew Clay would come for her the second she asked. They spoke for a few more minutes before Rory ended the conversation. She felt trapped, as though the walls were closing in around her. So far, she and Clay had managed to disguise their feelings, but they wouldn't be able to keep it up much longer before someone guessed. Kate wasn't blind, and neither was Mary.
"Rory?"
Clay called her name as he burst into the office.
"What happened? Skip told me you were all upset. Something about the car? What is it?"
"George called." She whirled around and pointed toward the phone. "The water pump arrived just like it was supposed to, but it's the wrong one." Clay dropped his gaze, then removed his hat and wiped his forehead.
"I'm sorry."
"I am too, but that doesn't help, does it?" The conversation with Dan hadn't improved matters, and taking her frustration out on Clay wasn't going to change anything either. "I'm stuck here, and this is the last place on earth I want to be."
"Do you think I like it any better?" he challenged.
Rory blinked wildly at the tears that burned for release.
"I wish to God your car had broken down 100 miles from Elk Run," he said. "Before you bombarded your way into my home, my life was set. I knew what I wanted, where I was headed. In the course of a few days, you've upended my whole world."
Emotion clogged Rory's throat at the unfairness of his accusations. She hadn't asked for the MGB to break down where it had. The minute she could, she planned to get out of his life and back to her own. No, she decided. They couldn't wait that long. It was much too painful for them both. She had to leave now. "I'll pack my things and be gone before evening."
"Just where do you plan to go?"
Rory didn't know.
"Somewhere.
Anywhere." She had to leave for his sake, as well as hers.
"Go back inside the house, Rory.
Before I say or do something else I'll regret. You're right. We can't be in the same room together. At least not alone.
She started to walk past him, eyes downcast, her heart heavy with misery. Unexpectedly, his hand shot out and caught her fingers, stopping her.
I didn't mean what I said. His voice rasped, warm and hoarse. None of it. Forgive me, Rory.
Her heart raced when his hand touched hers. It took all the restraint Rory could muster, which at the moment wasn't much, to resist throwing herself into his arms and holding on for the rest of her life.
Forgive me, too, she whispered. Forgive you? He asked, incredulous. No, Rory. I'll thank God every day of my life for having met you.
With that, he released her fingers, slowly, reluctantly.
Go now, before I make an even bigger fool of myself.
Rory ran from the office as though a raging fire were licking at her heels, threatening to consume her. And in a way, it was. For 2 days, Rory managed to stay completely out of his way. They saw each other only briefly, and always in the company of others. Rory was sure they gave Academy Award performances every time they were together. They laughed and teased and joked, and the only one who seemed to suspect things weren't quite right was Mary. Rory was grateful the housekeeper didn't question her, but the looks she gave Rory were frowningly thoughtful. 3 days after the Grange dance, Mary's sister arrived in Riversdale. Revealing more excitement than Rory had seen in their acquaintance, Mary fussed with her hair and dress, and as soon as she'd finished the lunch dishes, she was off. Putting on Mary's well-worn apron, Rory looped the long strands around her waist twice and set to work. Kate joined her mid-afternoon, carrying a large bag of ingredients for the dessert she was going to prepare. I've been cooking from the moment Mary left, Rory told Kate, pushing the damp hair from her forehead as she stirred wine into a simmering sauce. Rory intended to dazzle Clay and Skip with her one specialty, seafood fettuccine. She hadn't admitted to Mary how limited her repertoire of dishes was, although the housekeeper had repeatedly quizzed her about what she planned to make for dinner. Rory had insisted it was a surprise. She'd decided that this rich and tasty dish stood a good chance of impressing the Franklin men.
And I'm making Clay his favorite dessert, homemade lemon meringue pie. Kate reached for the grocery bag on the kitchen counter, and 6 bright yellow lemons rolled out. Rory was impressed. The one and only time she'd tried to bake a lemon pie, she'd used a pudding mix. Apparently, Kate took the homemade part seriously.
Whatever you're cooking smells wonderful, Kate said, stepping over to the stove. Crab, large succulent shrimp, and small bite-sized pieces of sole were waiting in the refrigerator to be added to the sauce just before the dish was served. Kate was busy whipping up a pie crust when the phone rang several minutes later. She glanced anxiously at the wall, her fingers sticky with flour and lard. Rory looked over at her.
Do you suppose I should answer that? You'd better. Clay usually relies on Mary to catch the phone for him.
Rory lifted the receiver before the next peal.
Elk Run.
That Miss Campbell?
Rory immediately recognized the voice of the mechanic from Riversdale.
Yes, this is Rory Campbell.
Remember I promised I'd call you when the part arrived? Well, it's here, all safe and sound, so you can stop fretting. Just came in a few minutes ago. Haven't even had a chance to take it out of the box. Thought you'd want to know.
It's the right one this time?
Here, I'll check it now. Yep, this is it.
Rory wasn't sure what she felt. Relief, yes, but regret, too.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's a little late for me to be starting the job this afternoon. My son's playing a little league game, and I promised him I'd be there. I'll get to this first thing in the morning and should be finished before noon. Give me a call before you head over here, and I'll make sure everything's running the way it should.
Yes, I'll do that. Thanks again. Slowly, Rory replaced the receiver. She leaned against the wall, sighing deeply. At Kate's questioning gaze, she smiled weakly and explained, "That was the mechanic. The water pump for my car arrived, and he's going to be working on it first thing in the morning."
"Rory, that's great."
"I think so, too." She did, and she didn't. Part of her longed to flee Elk Run, and another part of her realized that no matter how far she traveled, no matter how many years passed, she'd never forget these days with Clay Franklin.
"Then tonight's going to be your last evening here," Kate murmured. "Selfish as it sounds, I really hate the thought of you leaving."
"We can keep in touch."
"Oh, yes, I'd like that. I'll send you a wedding invitation."
That reminder was the last thing Rory needed. But once she was on the road again, she could start forgetting, she told herself grimly.
"Since this is going to be your last night, we should make it special," Kate announced brightly. "We're going to use the best china and set out the crystal wine glasses."
Rory laughed, imagining Mary's face when she heard about it. Even as she spoke, Kate was walking toward the dining room china cabinet. In a few minutes, she'd set the table, cooked the sauce for the pie, and poured it into the cooling pie shell that sat on the counter. The woman was a marvel. Rory was busy adding the final touches to the fettuccine when Clay and Skip came in through the back door.
"When's dinner?" Skip wanted to know. "I'm starved."
"Soon." Rory tested the boiling noodles to be sure they'd be cooked all the way through, but weren't overdone.
"Upstairs with the both of you," Kate said, shooing them out of the kitchen. "I want you to change into something nice."
"We're supposed to dress up for dinner?" Skip complained. He'd obviously recovered from any need to impress her with his sartorial elegance, Rory noted, remembering that he'd worn his Sunday best that first night. "We already washed. What more do you want?"
"For you to change your clothes. We're having a celebration tonight."
"We are?"
The boy looked from Kate to Rory and then back again.
"That's right," Kate continued, undaunted by his lack of enthusiasm. "And when we're through with dinner, there's going to be a farewell party for Rory. We're going to send her off country style."
"Rory's leaving?" Skip sounded shocked. "But she just got here."
"The repair shop from Riversdale called. Her car will be finished tomorrow and she'll be on her way."
Clay's eyes burned into Rory's. She tried to avoid looking at him, but when she did chance to meet his gaze, she could feel his distress. His jaw went rigid, and his mouth tightened as though he was bracing himself against Kate's words.
"Now hurry up, you two. Dinner's nearly ready," Kate said with a laugh. "Rory's been cooking her heart out all afternoon."
Both men disappeared, and Rory set out the fresh green salad she'd made earlier, along with the 7-grain dinner rolls she'd warmed in the oven. Once everyone was seated at the table and waiting, Rory ceremonially carried in the platter of fettuccine, thick with seafood. She'd spent at least 10 minutes arranging it to look as attractive as possible.
"Whatever it is, smells good,"
Skip called out as she entered the dining room.
"I'm so hungry I could eat a horse."
"Funny, Skip, very funny," Kate said.
Rory set the serving dish in the middle of the table and stepped back, anticipating their praise. Skip raised himself halfway out of his seat as he glared at her masterpiece.
"That's it?"
His voice was filled with disappointment. Rory blinked, uncertain how she should respond.
"You've been cooking all afternoon, and you mean to tell me that's everything?"
"It's seafood fettuccine," she explained.
"It just looks like a bunch of noodles to me."